Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Pray for the Devil, which sucks. We didn't. Yeah, true. just kind of sad. Yeah. Yeah, and spoiler alert, that's probably going to be in the recommendations somewhere at the end. But this film shows none of the good instincts that that film periodically shows. Yeah, I don't know. Last Exorcism Part 2 is just intrinsically incomprehensible, as is the whole film from what I remember. This movie, while stupid, soggy cardboard, as you said, it is very coherent. There is nothing bewildering about it, whereas... Yes. Yeah. Yes. Whereas with Last Exorcism Part 2, I remember that movie being utterly incoherent. As though it were directed and written by people who hadn't seen movies before. Like, they were aliens. Like, they didn't understand how this is supposed to work. It just kind of stuff happens and you don't know where it's going. I don't know. That makes it sound good. I promise. Last Exorcism Part 2, as much as I enjoy the original, the sequel, its incomprehensible weirdness is at no point pleasurable. That is true. Oh, shit. So, the movie is about a nun named Sister Anne who works at this exorcism school in Boston. And she can't train as an exorcist because that's only for dudes, priests specifically, as opposed to nuns. But she's very interested in exorcisms and she works in sort of a nurse capacity in this facility where they're treating potential possession victims and so forth, and she kind of wants to try and worm her way into exorcisms, and it does, basically. And she's got this backstory that we'll get into during the synopsis, but predictably enough, like all of these movies, and I don't just mean exorcism movies, but just like shit bucket theatrical release horror movies, wouldn't you know it, the protagonist has a traumatic childhood backstory. What a shock. Ha ha ha. No. Yeah. Yeah. No, she's just in there like twice to be like, you can't do it because you're a woman. That's basically her only purpose. Okay, wait. So you're talking about Virginia Madsen. Okay. Yeah, so Virginia Madsen plays a civilian, as Matt said. She's a psychiatrist or psychologist who's the resident skeptic, basically. It's like, I'm here to treat people with science. And, you know, there have been things in my work history that I can't fully explain, but I don't put a lot of stock in this mumbo jumbo. So I'm here to keep a lid on things. And yeah, she's not there much. It's really funny because near the beginning of the film, it's Sister Anne talking to her, Dr. Virginia Madsen, about basically it's almost like an entrance interview. It's like, okay, I have your records here. Your mother was a schizophrenic, and we get all the dopey flashbacks. I think maybe the worst element in all the flashbacks is, and this is in the trailer, when her mother slash whatever's possessing her mother is shouting, "Let me in! Let it!" There's a shot from the mother's side of the door where she's bashing her head against it at superhuman speeds. That's just some Looney Tunes shit. It's so silly. Yeah. Oh, no. Yes, rather than flavorlessly bad. But anyway, the point I was getting at was that the movie throughout keeps cutting to scenes of Virginia Madsen and Sister Anne talking to one another, but they're clearly just the same scene, and they don't really progress anything. It's possible that it's deliberately supposed to be non-linear, like it's supposed to be all the same conversation, but it could also just be that all the scenes just seem so identical. One thing's for certain, they just sat down, the actress who played Sister Anne on one side of the desk and Virginia Madsen on the other side of the desk. It's like, okay, Virginia, we have you for 2 days. Let's just shoot this whole thing out right now. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. She's a middle-aged woman who's vaguely stern and wearing all black. Clearly, she's terrifying. Yeah. Yeah, and not for the first time we get the deployment of spooky fast motion, which is always baleful. Yeah. There's one small thing that happens in an interaction with Natalie, the little girl, and Sister Anne that I want to highlight both because it's dumb and also because for me it became relevant later. So Anne is telling her, like, oh, you didn't eat very much. And they talk about her, like, drawing something. It's like, haha, I guess you're a starving artist, Hugh Hugh. And she says something like, well, I see they didn't give you dessert. And she hands the girl a little piece of candy. The girl's eating it. And she's like, what is it? Oh, some kind of nougaty goodness, I guess. What's nougat? I don't know. It's one of those conversations that the screenwriter clearly wedged in to be charming and to humanize both of these characters, but it's just stupid. It's bad. Father Quinn, I think. Well, they needed to justify this character being so hostile to women's empowerment by making her a nun, because, yeah, that would have been tricky. And we get the stretch mouth and, all the every goddamn exorcism movie trope in the book gets crammed into this scene. The two rookie priests who go in there to start the exorcism kind of freeze up, and then Father Quinn goes in after them. He seems to be doing okay for a while, and then he just, like, kind of falls down and hits his head, and then he's just completely out of commission. Right. Right, yeah. I didn't mean to imply he just fell down due to clumsiness, but it did seem right. It did seem just sort of anticlimactic. It's just like it's not like he got killed or anything. But anyway, at this juncture, Anne takes it upon herself to go in there and pick up where they left off, and she takes a more nurturing, people-focused approach where she treats Natalie as a person and is trying to reach the person still left inside the body as opposed to only addressing the demon and driving it out. Which is what everybody else was doing. And it appears to work, or at least achieve a temporary victory. I did. Diction, yeah. The actor, I think his name is Colin Salmon. There's two things that I know him from that leap immediately to mind. He's in the first few Pierce Brosnan Bond movies. He plays, I don't remember the character's name. He's one of the MI6 guys back in HQ. And he's also the guy in charge of the team entering the mansion in the original Resident Evil movie, the one who gets diced in the laser grid. And yeah, I mean he's a cool dude, very imposing presence, and yeah, wasted here. Well, it's not Google Translate because they misspelled the word from. It's supposed to be translating from Bulgarian. It says translate form, and then it's got the drop down, and she's selected Bulgarian. So I don't. That's very bad. Search. Yeah. Ouija, I'm pretty sure, the original. Yeah. Better. Yeah. I think this might be part of a later research scene, but they, like the rest of the movie, all kind of run together. So I'm just gonna bring this up now. When she's watching video from these exorcisms, they call them terminal cases. They're very hung up on this nomenclature. I didn't want to say terminology. That seemed redundant with, terminal. But terminal cases are basically the ones where the exorcism school she's at gives up and says, we got to ship them to the Vatican. We're done here. And she wants to learn more about them, but they're all classified. And so she, with the help of one of the rookie priests from the initial Natalie exorcism, Father Dante, who even from the first time they're on screen at the same time, they seem to have some kind of friendship, kind of a friendly wink and a nod, smile sort of thing. And he basically distracts the librarian so that Anne can get into the restricted area. So she's watching these videos and doing all this Google Translate bullshit, and she's furiously writing notes in a notebook. And they're the most inane fucking notes you could ever... That's just like writing down the word guilt portentously. There's a scene we elided because it's not super important. It's the first time, basically, that the demon that has apparently been chasing Anne her whole life... It's what drove her mother crazy and then eventually to suicide. It has reappeared. It possesses the old man, the catatonic guy we mentioned, and he pins her up against the door of his room, and you know, eyes roll in the back of his head, and his teeth get all grody, and he's just, let me in. And then the spooky tongue comes out. It's just lolling around, goofy shit, and... He starts dancing her around the room because there's it's all very stupid. But we see the tongue a couple more times in that scene. The reason that I'm bringing this up now is because another thing that's in this notebook is the phrase, tongue 5 inches. You're right. So either she just eyeballed it, or that's notes from a different case, and apparently measuring the tongue is a central part of the exorcism process. Yeah, that's the demon. Yeah. Right. Yes, very silly. Yeah, this was little neat. Yeah. Well, and maggots come out of the holes too. So there's a little bit of a wrinkle there. Yeah, that's really the only even vaguely intriguing horror set piece element from this whole movie. Which is stupid. Yes. It's kind of what that means. Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, renegade exorcists. If I didn't know about this movie and you say the two words renegade exorcists to me, I'm like, let's fucking go. Yeah. Yeah. And so where she gives this speech, it's in the context of a scene where they decide, yeah, okay, we don't know if Natalie's any better. She might still be getting worse. And if that's the case, she's a terminal patient. She has to go back to the Vatican. And Anne, of course, does not want to give up because, contrary to the insistence of Father Quinn, all the warnings he gave her, you know, don't get attached. She's very attached to this girl for reasons that you can probably predict. Right. Natalie, yeah. So basically, she's told to fuck off by the higher ups. It's out of your hands. And as she's storming down the hallway angrily, she gets intercepted by Father Dante, who's like, I agree with you. And in order to put your theories into practice, I want to try an exorcism on my sister. It's not quite that out of left field. There is mention made of her one other time earlier on. It's during the first, or immediately after the first Natalie exorcism, where Natalie has drawn a picture of a pregnant woman with the words Una Chica on it or something like, you know, it's a girl or whatever. And Dante is looking very mournfully at this picture and he explains, like, oh yeah, my sister, she was raped. And then she lost the baby, and ever since that, she has been afflicted. And the word afflicted is clearly in implied italics. And he doesn't, prior to this scene that we're talking about now, intercepting Anne in the hallway, doesn't actually use the word possessed, but there is enough prep for this that it's just not complete nonsense. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's flavor text before the movie even starts talking about this is why there are new exorcism schools starting in 2018. Why they picked that year, I don't know. But beginning in 2018, there had been so many reports of exorcisms that the Vatican's finally like, okay, we'll open some exorcism schools outside of Rome. So that's why there's one in Boston, apparently. But anyway, the funniest thing about this scene of Father Dante intercepting Sister Anne in the hallway is when he explains what he wants to do, she says to him, "You want to do an unauthorized exorcism?" And the way she says it is as though he has just proposed shitting in Christ's mouth. While drinking a child's blood. Like, but then she goes along with it. You know, she's totally on board because she's gotta, again, break that glass ceiling and prove that she can exorcise demons just as well or better than any man. Right. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That movie's also pretty bad. Yep, he's the criminal responsible for that one, as opposed to Jeff Wadlow or Adam Robitel. Fucking A. So they go to the apartment that Father Dante's mother and sister share. The sister has been in bed for days, apparently, and they just start doing an exorcism. And there's this ceiling fan that's spinning very ominously. And as things build up, it starts spinning faster and faster. The payoff for this is that I don't even know what the pieces of a ceiling fan are called, per se, but you know. Blades, yes, very good. Right. Well, they snap off at random and get flung into the walls, you know, impaling the walls. One cuts a crucifix in half. Right. Yeah, you know, sky hole and yeah. So all the while, the sister's stomach is distended like she's still pregnant. And basically, what comes out is that she feels guilty because she didn't want the baby. It's like, well, I mean, duh. But, you know, she's very devout, so it wasn't like she was going to go get an abortion. So presumably, she ended up miscarrying. She did lose the baby. And that guilt, apparently, which has been Sister Anne's pet theory all along during her research, is that in certain cases of possession, the possessed feel so guilty about something or other that they just let the demon in. They volunteer. They feel like they deserve it or something. Yeah, right. No. So this appears to work. Everything calms down in the room, and Anne even says, like, it's gone. Father Dante is weeping tears of joy. And then 90 seconds later, somebody corners Sister Anne. It's like, Cardinal Matthews wants to see you. And this is the second and, okay, I think there's three times that we see this guy. But again, perfunctory, supervisory character, Cardinal Matthews, summons her to his office. Father Dante is already there. It's like, yeah, his sister killed herself last night after you did this thing. So it didn't work. You fucked up. You failed us. You broke our trust. She's like, okay, I'll go back to the convent now. So she does that. She gets a visit from Virginia Madsen. This is, other than one scene in Natalie's room early in the movie, and then the sporadic, is it the same scene or is it just multiple identical scenes in her office? This is the only other time beyond those that she shows up. She turns up at Sister Anne's room in the convent. So it's like, oh, this is bleak. And then hands her a book about trauma. It's like, I know you're kind of a one book kind of gal. It's like, I mean, she's been doing a bunch of research. It's not like she only reads the Bible, whatever. But here's this book about trauma. You should read it. And then she fucks off, never to be seen again. Oh, sorry. Virginia Madsen also has one other function in this scene. She says, oh, Natalie's all better. She got released after observation. And Sister Anne's all happy. But once again, like 90 seconds later, they're... It was nuts. So Father Dante shows up and it's like, Natalie got readmitted. She's still possessed. She killed two orderlies and a priest in the ambulance that brought her back to St. Michael's. And she gave me this. He says, she gave me this, and he's about to hand something to Sister Anne. And this is why I insisted on explaining the nougat scene, because my expectations for this film at this point were so low that I legitimately believed there was a real chance that he was gonna hand her a candy wrapper for the fucking nougat candy. The only way to defeat the devil is with nougat. But no. Instead, he hands her, you know, a rosary. And we get a flashback here. So Sister Anne got pregnant when she was 15. And she had the baby, but she gave the baby away because, you know, she was 15. And her mother was dead. I wonder. She gave the baby her rosary beads when she gave the baby away. And so Natalie handing her that, or the demon making Natalie's body hand her that, whatever. It's like, oh, Natalie's your kid. Now, again, this isn't coming really at all out of left field. It might sound like it right now, but they have made prior mention of Sister Anne's past. We've just elided it because there's a lot of garbage to get through. Yes. Feel something growing inside you. Yeah, but I like your reading better. So, as if Sister Anne wasn't motivated enough to save Natalie, it's like, okay, now you have confirmation. It's your daughter. Let's go. So they sneak into St. Michael's. There's a shot of Sister Anne standing under a street lamp, which is, if it's intentional, it's the worst fucking exorcist pastiche that they could have done. It's just, it's dumb looking. Yes. Yeah. She goes inside and she meets Father Dante in there. They go down to the catacombs. I think they actually call them that. It's part of the old-timey structure of St. Michael's from back when it was just a dunking pit for witches, basically. I mean, there's the big baptismal font full of water, and they would take witches in there and try and cure them by dunking them in there, and then, of course, most of them would drown. Apparently, all this crap is still under there, and it's where they will occasionally hide terminal patients that apparently they don't think they have time to get to Rome before they die. So that's what they've done with Natalie. There's three priests, including the other rookie who was in with Father Dante during Natalie's first exorcism, plus two older guys who never get names or dialogue, and they're all just sort of praying and brandishing crucifixes. Natalie's behind bars, literally, and says textbook spooky shit to Anne about, I invited you, blah, blah, blah. She kills the other three priests, hurls them around against walls and bars and stuff, and kills them. Then there's just a little bit of dopey cat and mouse. Eventually, Anne takes Natalie and says, I give up, take me instead. Spooky fog comes out of Natalie's mouth and goes into Anne's mouth. I don't think it's that, but you're right that it's not a Jason Miller thing at all. I mean, there's a little bit of giving up here, but I think it's also like this is the way she wanted to win all along. Yeah. Dopey. And with the last bit of control she still has, she's like, yeah, run! Because Dante has found his way in there and picked up Natalie. Like, okay, go. And again, there's some BS cat and mouse. Natalie gets tossed around. Dante gets tossed around. Anne does a lot of bone-cracky, bendy bullshit. Eventually, she forces herself into the baptismal font, essentially, after once again hearing this one spooky voice that she's heard sporadically throughout the movie just talking to her, Annie, let go. And apparently this was supposed to be spooky before, but actually it's her mother's spirit still protecting her or some bullshit. And this gives her just enough strength to beat the demon's control of her own body. And she dunks herself in this giant pool of holy water and beats the demon, basically. Right. Right. Yeah. So, predictably, Dante fishes her out of the font so she doesn't just drown like a normal human person. And then all the church higher-ups are like, "Atta girl. We're gonna send you on a fellowship to the Vatican where you're gonna learn exorcism. Congratulations, you did in fact shatter the glass ceiling. Way to go." Pretty much. And she is in a cab, presumably going to the airport, and the cab stops while making a right turn around a corner. She sees this kind of dumpy-looking, middle-aged woman a ways down the sidewalk, just kind of standing stock still and staring at her. I'm like, okay, what's the cabbie gonna do? Sure enough, the cabbie is whispering, "Annie, Annie." And eventually, she gets jump-scared by the cabbie suddenly sitting next to her in the back seat. And then she looks back to her window, and there's the old woman standing there with cataract eyes, sort of head cocked and staring at her. And then very resolutely, she pulls out her crucifix and just kind of holds it up at the cabbie. And then he goes all, "Bleh!" And then cut to black. Roll credits. Yeah. Or like at the end of Polaroid when they hurl the camera into the river or whatever it was, and the music that plays, it's like, what is this? Batman Begins? Yeah. Fucking cape shit is right. More after the break.
These sessions are mandatory for all staff, Sister Anne.
My mother struggled with depression.
Annie, honey, can I come in?
But even as a child, I knew it was...
Annie, open the door, please.
More.
Let me in, Annie! Let me in!
My mother talked about hearing that voice inside.
Let me in, Annie! Let me in!
She said the voice didn't really want her. It wanted me.
Hello, listeners. It's Jim, here as always during the break to tell you some stuff you probably already know. Please follow us on Twitter at Shock Doctors Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/shockdoctorspod, or check us out on Apple Podcasts. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got an idea for a movie you'd like us to check out, feel free to send us a DM on social media or email us at shockdoctorspod@gmail.com. And now, back to the show.
The Citadel has fallen. Black smoke blots out the sun. Because as some of you may already know, we have a female student in the class, only as an observer. So, let's descend into the mouth of hell, shall we?
There are more possessions reported today than at any other time in history. So we must fight for every soul.
Defend us in battle against the spirits of wickedness.
And we're back. So, I mean, I don't know how much I have left to say about this movie. We've kind of attacked all of its specific stupid elements at some length in the synopsis. I mean, we did do a nearly hour-long synopsis for a movie that was all of 87 minutes before the credits, but... Yeah. Yeah, it's after she was pregnant. Yeah. 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 Yeah, for sure. And a priest. Oh, God, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You understand creepy hair. Pushing 10, probably. Doesn't seem to work. Yeah, the only reason, and I'm not saying this makes the hair thing work at all, but I think the reason that there is a hair thing is because they decided to make the precursor to every incident of abuse, Annie's abuse by her mother, be precipitated by the hair combing. So hair is thematically relevant for Anne. It still is dumb, especially considering that even when we see scenes of the intense combing take place, there's nothing. It's so sanitized. I mean, like, bad hair, for example. Like you say, solid 6 out of 10 type movie. When shit goes down with hair in that movie, it is sometimes grody. Not like horror related type grody, but just, oh shit, your scalp got burned, or you combed it too hard and you pulled some out by the root, now you're bleeding, you know, things like that. There was none of that when child Anne was getting her hair aggressively combed by her mother. So you're just left thinking, like, so that's how your mother traumatized you, combing your hair too hard and banging her head on the door sometimes? Okay. Color me unimpressed. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and all shot in that weird, flat, kind of sepia-toned, but not really, just sort of washed-out color palette that so many of these fucking flashbacks are done with. Right. Yeah, you have officially desanctified the water in there. Apparently not. That. So, in terms of recommendations, I was talking to Matt about this during the break. The tricky part with us having done several possession movies, possession slash exorcism movies for the podcast, is that as a subgenre, even though I have a weakness for it and I like the trappings and the tropes for some impossible to explain reason, you know, I'm not a lapsed Catholic or anything. I don't have any childhood comfort that I'm reaching for unconsciously, but for a subgenre I have this weird fondness for, 95% of it is bad. Like, there are not very many. Yeah, exactly. Obviously, the granddaddy of the subgenre, The Exorcist, has never been surpassed, equaled, or even really approached. There have been a few pretty good, or at least relatively interesting ones. We both like the first Last Exorcism, which is a stupid phrase to have to say. Exorcism of Emily Rose is pretty good. Even The Rite, which is a terrible movie, objectively, it does benefit from having Anthony Hopkins' gravitas in it. Yeah. But these are all movies that we've already recommended. So many exorcism movies are more of the ilk of Devil Inside, which we've bitched about multiple times during this episode specifically, and many times before, or The Vatican Tapes, or any one of these, the blanking of first name, last name movies, again, with the exception of Exorcism of Emily Rose. But like Possession of Hannah Grace, which we did an episode on way back, just terrible, nothing sorts of movies. So it's tricky to come up with a fresh recommendation. I'm going to try to recommend two, however. One is purely on spurious reasons and is itself not a very good movie, but it's sort of pulpy, dumb fun. The movie is Priest. It's from about 12 years ago. It's in a sort of, now that I'm thinking about it, I might be splicing two movies together. Let me just look this up right quick. Oh, I know what I was doing. Okay, so upon further review, I was mistaken. I was splicing together two dopey early 2010s horror/horror action movies that both have Paul Bettany in them, so I think I can be forgiven. Legion. Legion is the movie I actually want to talk about. So in Legion, I believe Bettany, yeah, he plays the Archangel Michael, who has been, I don't know, temporarily tossed out of heaven for being disobedient or something, but like not as bad as Lucifer. And then he has to help this group of people trapped in a diner fight demons or something. Again, it's not a great movie, but it's more entertaining than this movie, and it also has goofy CGI stretch mouth in it. So that's why I'm recommending it right now. My more serious recommendation, now that I've taken 5 minutes to explain a movie that wasn't even the movie I initially named, the movie that I would more wholeheartedly like to recommend is called The Wailing. It's from 2016. It's a Korean film, and it's about a series of murders and other violent acts that are taking place in this remote village that are the responsibility of kind of a demonic entity that is jumping around and making people do these terrible things. It's super spooky and very atmospheric, and it's a top-notch K-horror flick. And I'm not really going to say too much else about it, but it is definitely worth checking out. So that is probably more worth your time than 97% of exorcism/possession horror movies. So check it out. Yeah. Are we not cats? Hell. Right. Well, now that we have dispensed with the decidedly not nougaty goodness of Pray for the Devil, which, as I've said before, I don't think I mentioned it in this episode, used to be called The Devil's Light. Also a dumb title, but somewhat less dumb. Also, because this is an audio medium and not a visual one, I have to explain that Pray for the Devil is spelled P-R-E-Y, so it's a really dopey double entendre, and I think that's why I hate it the most. I'm sure they know. Or maybe ever. But until next time, I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. We'll see you later. As always, we have some acknowledgments. Our music was composed by Will Connor. Audio for the bumpers was taken from Pray for the Devil 2022 movie official trailer Christian Navarro, Jacqueline Byers, uploaded by Lionsgate Movies. All rights reserved. Our next episode will be up on Sunday, November 20th, and we will be discussing VHS 99, the fifth installment in the long-running horror anthology series. See you then.